She's a former public school teacher turned stay-at-home mom. He's a talk show host who's made a career covering politics from afar. Now, Christine Stegall and her husband Chris have chosen a new path forward for their child in Christian education. Join them as they explore and experience this important alternative in education for the first time. Welcome to Making the Leap.
I've really come to believe that resources follow vision, not the other way around, particularly in the church, giving follows mission. People see the mission, they come to support it. Rarely do you ever have all the resources you need and all your, you know.
Yeah, all the boxes checked.
I've never heard a pastor say, well, we're flush with cash, we just don't know how to spend it, right?
Welcome back into another episode of Making the Leap. We are so glad to have you with us today. This is an episode, I think I say this a lot, but I feel like it's an episode I've been looking forward to for a while, kind of been in the making for a while. We are always privileged.
It shocked me, and I'm sorry to interrupt, you started telling me that we, this show and our guest today, we've not spoken to for a year.
Right. I know. And that's why I like these, though. This is a neat benefit, I think, is getting to follow up and check back in and see how things are going with people that we've had on before who are doing what we talk about, the actual making the leap, whether it's sending your kids to school, whether it's starting a school. And that's what we've got today.
Yeah. And this is the perfect guest to do this because, you know, when we talk and do these shows, you know, we do them every week and then they go away and then a calendar turns. And I think sometimes we think to ourselves, and people that listen or watch think to themselves, well, whatever happened to that guy? This is exactly who we should have back.
Yes.
Because this is exactly what we've been talking about. Somebody that took a leap of faith, not only put their kids in school or thought about putting their own kids in school, but launched their own Christian school and the birth pains of doing that. And a year later, what's the story?
So we're here to talk with Luke Johnston today, who is with Glen Haven Academy. Through the Glen Haven Church. And we're so glad to have you with us today, Luke. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Yeah, no, it's a pleasure to be here. And so I'm alive.
Welcome back.
You made it. You survived.
Yeah. That was, so at the time, we remember you were expecting a child.
Yep.
That child has come since.
Yep. Walking around. Yeah, we are full-on parent mode, me and my wife. And that's one of the reasons why Jamie would have loved to be here. But even finding a babysitter becomes difficult.
A whole new thing. And three is a lot different than saying, hey, can you come watch my little one-year-old or my two-year-old? Now you've got three of them.
And for some
it is.
If people wanted to go back and refresh themselves or didn't hear the episode with Luke, do you remember roughly when it was? I should have looked that up.
It was in January. It was legitimately just about a year ago. So I would say it was probably one of our first. We will link it.
We'll
get that information. Yes, one of our first of 2023. Okay. I know it was in the beginning of January because she was like, I was kind of hoping she would not go into labor when she was here. And I know that that was right at this time. So well, I do know it was a year ago.
Here's what I remember distinctly about that conversation. You're effectively launching a new church. And at the same time, you said, we're going to not only start a new church, but we're going to do it in conjunction with starting a school. Either one of those things would be a Herculean effort. To do them both, I can't even imagine. And so here you are. You're still standing, as you said.
Certainly. Yeah. Well, I believe, and our leadership really believe, that starting the school and what the school has become and what it represents is a primary method of revitalization. Churches like ours that were primarily an older congregation, actually a high percentage over the age of 75.
Okay.
When we began to think about how are we going to reach the next generation, and of course, there's a lot of ways you can do that. There's a lot of strategies you can go about doing that, but that's one of the main questions that most churches are asking right now, how do we reach the next generation? And as we began to look around at options in our area, when we talked to parents, started to listen to what's going on, what's heavy on your heart right now, the conversation of schooling, what to do with my kids in education, and of course, we were going through 2020 and all the change that brought. And so a lot of parents were beginning to ask, what can we do? What can be different? And so we saw that as a prime opportunity as we were resetting, replanting as a church to maybe we can do this. maybe this is where we need to put the majority of our resources. Because you can't do about everything, right? You have to find what is the Lord calling you to and then stick with it.
And did you acquire a new building? When you replanted a church, or I was trying to remember.
Yeah, so it was an existing church and congregation, but the building was large in a great area. And so, but the building was not being used.
Okay.
Very small percentage of the building was being used. So that's why when actually my wife and I first came to the church, we both sensed from the Lord at some point he's going to call us to start a school here. Because not as young parents ourselves, mm-hmm. that value is also on our mind. What are we going to do with our kids? What are the options for our kids? And so with the building having, it was actually built, a portion of it was built for a school in the 1960s.
Oh, okay.
And pretty much since the late 1960s, that school moved to a different building. It outgrew that space. And there's been nothing going on there. And so it's been kind of mothballed, if you will. And so we decided, well, with what the Lord, you always have to say, what has the Lord given us? Well, here's our, you do a SWOT analysis, whatever it may be. Here's our strengths. Here's some opportunities, threats. How can we turn even what are opportunities or weaknesses of ours into these strengths? And so the school really fit for where the church was, what the neighborhood was looking for, and what we had to offer. Now, it doesn't change the fact that it still has been quite the leap of faith.
Sure.
And totally in the hands of God.
Absolutely.
And not possible. You know, Henry Blackaby, who wrote the book Experiencing God, okay. he says, every time that the Lord asks you to do something, you come to a crisis of faith where you basically have to say, if the Lord doesn't come through, this will fail.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what true faith walking is. Mm-hmm. As long as we're in control, you know, Gideon's army, the whole nine yards, and we think we can do it, we'll take the credit for it. But the Lord calls us as Christians again and again to take leaps of faith, to trust him. Mm-hmm. Now, it's calculated because it's based on his character, but true leaps of faith. And so we're going to go for this, but if the Lord doesn't come through, it'll fail. But we believe that he's called us to it, and the old adage, you'll see us through it.
Wow. I love hearing that you saw a space could be used, you know, as a pastor of a church, wanting to open up those doors, wanting to be able to bring people in, of course, does not come without its set of obstacles, I know. But as we talk to people, that frequently comes up in conversation, is that we do have a lot of church buildings across our country, in our area for sure, not being used on a Monday through Friday basis. But the ones that are choosing to use their space, whether it's for co-ops, homeschool co-ops, schools, I think it really can't be anything but beneficial, even though I know it comes with a cost and it comes with the workload for sure.
And we tend to, as churches, think too large. And I don't mean that we think small in the sense of what God can do, but we tend to think too large in what we need to do for it to be successful or to be effective. And so that goes into with church program, but also with the school, that when someone says, let's start a school or we should start a school, immediately our minds go to what we know as schools. They think of the biggest, the best, the brightest, successful schools, and that, oh man, what would it take to get to that level? Instead of thinking, what is needed? What can we offer? Does it have to look that way? And that was a big question for us. But if you start a school with 10 kids, and you have but you have the right curriculum, the right space, a whole lot of love, families that are engaged, is that not success? Is that not a wonderful thing? And how hard is that really to do if you have the space? And so I think it's we get concerned, we get kind of scared thinking about a paralysis by analysis on these things, but that's part of our testimony.
This is one of the things that I kind of want to get down in the nitty-gritty about, because organizationally, I'm always intrigued. There's a sale that has to be made to a congregation.
Yeah.
They have to have buy-in. I mean, you're a pastor with this idea. You've got an older congregation that got out of the school business some time ago.
Yeah.
I can imagine there was some resistance to this. Pastor, we can't, or we did this once, or this isn't going to work. Did you encounter resistance?
Oh, yeah. For sure.
And then why? What is the basis for the resistance? I think people, because this is not new to you, or I should say exclusive to you.
No.
This is very common. We hear this in churches all over the place, that people aren't excited about it.
Well, one of the main comments we got from the congregation is, of course, you're biting off more than you could chew. And that is true, as I said, that I can chew, but not for the Lord. But organizationally, what it requires. So a lot of churches, when they look at reaching children or reaching youth, we've gotten in the habit of hiring or equipping a volunteer, call them a children's minister, a youth minister, and then having what we call the children's ministry, right?
Right.
And so that includes Sunday school, Wednesday nights, things of that nature. What I started to say is we were because we started from zero. So what makes it difficult for a lot of churches that we did not have, that was actually a help, is that we didn't have something pre-existing that you kind of have to, because to open one door, you have to start.
So you have to undo some things to.
There was
to
no
do
pre
again,
yes. bias. There was no bias towards something else.
Exactly.
Yeah. We've always done it this way. You weren't doing really anything at the
time. We had no children's ministry, no youth ministry. Okay. My daughter was the only one in the nursery at the time.
Okay.
And so as we began to think, okay, what are we going to do that's different? How are we going to reach young people? And the most response is, well, we need to hire a children's pastor. We need to start this program. We need to do VBS, one, all these great things. Mm-hmm. This is what a lot of churches do. And so what we began to process and what I began to say is, what if our children's ministry is the school? Because that really is a big portion of why we are starting this, is we don't believe that 1 hour on Wednesday night or on Sunday school, as good as it is, which should continue happening, is enough to really disciple our families and the families around us, and also in an evangelistic sense. So what if we start first with the school and see what comes of that with our children's ministry, with our youth ministry? So we're going to put all the resources that you would put, the energy resources, the staffing, whatever, any kind of money that we have towards getting the school off the ground. Think about that. What could that be? And then we're going to think about the school as a discipleship training mechanism. That's really what it is. Mm-hmm. And we're going to now have students coming to us 5 days a week for, 6 or 7 hours a day that we're, of course, focusing on a great education, but are also discipling them, teaching them their faith, how to share their faith. So I really made that pitch and said, I believe this is where we should put our focus. So instead of hiring a children's director, let's hire a teacher.
Huh. I think that's amazing.
This is going to be our thing. And we went whole into it. So that's where we had the, it was helpful to us because we didn't have that existing structure that we had to tear down. So that's where it works well.
So then you get buy-in, that's step one from everyone, and you decide to take this plunge, make the leap, and now you got a teacher in place. I remember you borrowed some furniture. you've got kind of what you think is a structure ready to go, but you've got to get kids in there now. Now you've got to convince families. And at the time, if memory serves, you were also wondering, will God bring the children?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So
yep.
Has he?
He has brought the ones that need to be there, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is where I would love to encourage other, because one of the cool things about being here last time is that in that time, several pastors from your listening base around the nation have reached out to me personally and have said that we're inspired to do this. How do we do it? And a lot of their concern is, this is a brand new fishing pond. How are we going to get the kid?
What if they don't come?
What if they don't come?
Right.
And so I sit here and say, we had seven. We have seven that started off the school with. And
all you need is one.
All you need is one.
Yeah.
You just need one. And I think seven is great. I think that's amazing.
Yes. And I know organizationally and management, you're going, but how are you going to pay for a teacher? How is this? Mm-hmm. How is this paying it for itself? And I will certainly get to that. But we started, with just seven. And I was just saying before the show that there are times I was worried about that. I was like, well, how are we going to get by? But it turned out to be perfect. Because we have the age groups are kind of right in the same area. They're all girls.
Okay.
And I have all girls personally, too. Okay. So it's just girls everywhere. But it started out perfectly, but it was a little family that started. And as we're going through the motions and we're learning things, there are many times we said to each other, man, I'm glad this wasn't like 100 kids and we're having to learn these things with a big group of people. So it turned out to be perfect.
So it could have been too big. To be clear, it could have been too much at first. I mean, if you'd had a bum's rush to the building, 50 kids, that was probably more than you could have chewed.
And most of them were just word of mouth. We spent a decent amount of dollars trying to think about the marketing side of things, but it became word of mouth. And a lot of them ended up with – the cool part about it is a lot of them ended up joining the church.
Great.
That's awesome.
Because we tried to make it affordable. We also offer a membership discount, but they were in the community, and it was the – they came looking, and it was perfect for them and their families. But because of that, we've been able to start off really well, and we've been able to learn a lot of things. We've been able to work through different things. But on the financial piece of it is – because there's a part of me says, well, how are we going to make this work? And you do start to – you can panic.
Mm-hmm.
But the beauty of it is that once we started asking volunteers from the church, come in and read a story to the kindergartners. Come in and eat lunch with them. Come in at our chapel in the morning and see how it's going. And when those congregational members came and they got to actually see it on those first couple of days, we, praise the Lord, had many of those congregational members said, I want to support this school. And we had someone who gave a donation that covered our entire first year's finances.
Oh, boy.
That gave me goosebumps.
Yeah.
Because they got to see it.
But, and that's what you said, though, and that's what I think is so amazing. You got the families that were there that needed to be there. You have the right families, and then you have the right congregation members that show up, and not only just show up, but invest now financially and metaphorically. You know, that they're in it now. They're invested in a way that I think is more impactful than just, oh, our church has a school. You know, now they know and they're involved. I think that's amazing.
Yeah, you had people in-house. I mean, that's really something, and I'm not maligning them for this. It's just, it's interesting that in-house you had the resources you needed. The spigot just had to be turned on, so to speak. They had to invest, right, as she said, and you didn't need to go for outside sources. It all... There it was. God provided right there under your roof.
Yes, and I've really come to believe that resources follow vision, not the other way around, particularly in the church, giving follows mission. People see the mission. They come to support it. Rarely do you ever have all the resources you need and all your, you know.
Yeah, all the boxes checked.
I've never heard a pastor say, well, we're flush with cash. We just don't know how to spend it, right?
And that's what people are hungry for. They're hungry for vision. Mm-hmm. And once you can sit them down and they can see, my goodness, when they can sit down and read the story and they see the kids light up and they can see how they're seeing or hearing the word of God every morning in chapel. You know, but also their curriculum is thoroughly in the Bible. It's Christ-centered. They go, my goodness, why is it taking us this long to even get here?
Right.
And so it begins to compound in that sense. But it's been perfect on that regard. And there was a part of me that just said, that your pride gets in the way. And you say, we've done all this. We put it on the newspapers and the radio. And what's going on? You know, what's wrong with us? And you have to trust that the Lord knows exactly who needs to be there, who's watching. And there is a part, you know, for those who are thinking of starting a school, it's hard for families, first of all, to make the leap.
Sure.
But then also when there's something new, because you do want to. I mean, as a parent, I'm thinking, well, would I want to get involved with our school? And I'm thinking, well, what would I be thinking about? Because there is a part, it's like, are these guys going to sink or swim?
Yeah. Right. Do they know what they're doing?
Right.
Well, if I'm going to upend our whole life, do these people know what they're doing?
Right.
And
right?
We, you know, I know that we've talked about this before, but one of the things that we said as we looked at the first school that had 10 total, including our daughter, was that's what we were about to start her in. And then we moved, which we've shared before on here. But when we made that first initial call and we went to the meeting and we sat there and listened to them, we just kept thinking, it cannot be worse than where we're at right now. It's not going to be worse, and maybe it can even be amazing. And I was disappointed when we changed and we were going to move and then we were going to leave. And I kept thinking, well, I'm on board with this. I want to see what happens with this. And that school has grown, but it was 10. It was 10 kids. And our daughter's eyes were like,
right.
That's not what I know. Oh, and our friends kind of were
and
like,
I thought,
what?
I mean, we're taking our child out of a school of hundreds and then meeting in this building with a few well-intentioned people and 10 kids. And I thought, are we crazy?
And their hearts were right. Everything felt right.
Yeah. But are we doing damage? Is this a terrible mistake?
Sure.
We were thinking as traditional public school parents.
But I think we had to give it a chance and we had to sit and speak with people. And so that's what I would say, too, that I think – I'm sure you know this, but as parents listen and think about a place that's smaller, that looks different, sounds different, maybe it's set up different, it's not traditional. Well, traditional isn't working for a lot of people anymore. And so maybe it is okay to kind of dip your toe. I think I would encourage people to do the non-traditional piece and see how it goes, because there's huge benefits to 7 in a school versus hundreds in a school. Yeah. You know, I mean, I know you've seen that.
Particularly on the parental involvement. So we've had a lot of families said, well, we were really considering homeschooling, but we weren't sure if we could pull it off because we want to be involved in our kids' education, but obviously not too much. They wanted to find that balance. Mm-hmm. And our school actually provided a really good balance for a lot of families in terms of being able, because we need your help. We need your volunteer. And here's the ways you can help, but also the ways where, of course, our teachers are running with it and they're in the class. So there's not too much of that heavy presence of a parent, but there's a good balance. And this is real, and it's been easy because it's not overwhelming. Mm-hmm. You know, we're a tight-knit family with a small group, and we communicate and do events together and get to know each other and live life together. And so that small kind of school mindset is really a beautiful thing. And it's not wasn't my paradigm either. I wanted to see it be bigger, and but the Lord has humbled me on that in a major way, in particular by showing I will provide. Doesn't need to look the way you think it is. And so, and he will. And I know you're probably, our church was not well endowed or had huge givers, but you'd be surprised at what inspires people. You really
absolutely.
Will.
And these seven small families, this small group of people, these seven families, I assume now will become your chief marketing arm, really, that that's you can't do better than word of mouth of people that are in the building every day.
That's right. And that's actually what we learned. So we ended up right at that time, of course, Herzog Foundation has been a wonderful partner and ally.
And I want to talk a little bit about that because I think that's amazing, just the coincidences of things.
Which we'll get into that, but that word of mouth.
The word of mouth was a huge portion that the Herzog training spoke about. You know, getting people, you know, having a vision kind of casting to let people so that they will go and tell their friends and tell their circles of influence instead of the kind of old way of like, well, we got to get on the radio, the newspaper, is actually not very effective. It's all about how you can rally people to the cause, and our these seven families are doing exactly that. Yeah.
Do you anticipate that you will see growth now, given that? I mean, do you have any kind of empirical data that says, "Well, we are going to go from seven to whatever next," or do you know yet?
No idea.
Too early to say. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm giving that up. I tried to think that way.
Sure.
But now,
so you can't. This is the point. You cannot spend a minute obsessing about how many students are in your school. You just can't waste a minute thinking that way, can you?
No, you really can't. And that's hard.
And I think it's almost the flip too. Like I know the opposite, why don't I say the opposite end, but the other end of that, I know, you know, where we're at, it's big. It's a big school and there's
by comparison,
people, right, by comparison, and people are coming and they'll accept the kids that they can accept and say, I don't know if we're going to have a teacher, but God's going to provide the teacher or God's going to provide whatever, you know, and that is hard. That's hard sometimes to sit and watch. And I would imagine it's the same, whether it's a wait list or we'd like some people here. You know, I think you have to know, you just have to kind of sit back and and pray on it and just relax maybe a little bit on it.
And we're, you know, we're hopeful. We're praying.
Sure.
Lord, send us the families that you want. And so we're continuing to put out there. We have a pretty large space, so we have a lot of room to grow. But yeah, I was trying to think, okay, we need to have this amount of people or we think it's going to look this way. All of us have kind of just gone that we're just going to trust God because we thought it'd be this way and it wasn't. We thought we wouldn't have finances, but we do. So Lord, do as you please. But I think what helps the families also with the fear component is we've really tried to do a good job with these families and those that are looking around to just over-communicate and to have super intimate, lots of open houses, show them exactly how this is going to go, show them the curriculum, what our plans are if something, you know, we do have contingency plans. So we're not trying to, we're not totally foolhardy, but even as we're trusting the Lord and we're listening to the next place he's told us to step, but just taking them in your confidence and showing this is how God has led us. If you have, if you're called to this, this is a role that you can play. And for the families that have come, it has just been, they look at you and go, my goodness, this is exactly what we've been praying for.
That's and I amazing. Think this will probably lead into some of the foundation training and mentoring, but I'll ask, what do you ask of these new families as you're trying to build a school, whether it's seven or 70 families? What there's got to be a buy-in and a modicum of expectation, I would assume, at least a base level of expectation from parents. If you're bringing your kids here, this is not going to be a traditional school in the sense that you know it from a public school setting. But here's what we're going to need from you, besides just finances, or even your support. What do you ask of parents, families?
Well, first and foremost is prayer. We ask you to be dedicated to prayer. But we do ask that all of our students find a place to serve the school in some way. And so a lot of our parents can act as what we call monitors. So we have supervising teachers, because telling you a little bit about the model, that it's kind of a one-room schoolhouse where you have this learning center and individual offices.
Yeah.
And so we have a lead teacher who's on staff, who is the one who's really, you know, making sure the curriculum, giving assistance and tutoring. But then there are monitors who we send through a training, but that they help kind of answer questions and make sure, you know, anything that is with the kids that are running up against or that the teacher can't do, that they're helping. A lot of them are parents or church volunteers as well. But of course, there's recess and lunch, but then there's fundraising and there's marketing. And a lot of our parents have gotten behind that and just done an awesome job where the team expands. How can we continue to get the word out? So we ask them to engage. We're actually teetering on as if that should be a mandatory thing or not, which I think it probably should
be. In some places right. Sure. Some people, you have to do what works.
How about an expectation of, you'd mentioned membership discounts. You encourage these families to get involved in your church. How about an expectation of their own personal faith?
Yes.
Is that something you analyze?
Yes. And this is actually our mentor who we met through Herzog, Mark Wilson, helped us with, because there's the two different kind of schools you can be. They're covenantal schools, they may call, which is more of the discipleship, Christian families, or families that are wanting to, that you have to have a statement of faith that is signed off on, a pastoral recommendation, or an evangelical school that is, anyone can really kind of come in and it's used as a means of evangelism. We decided to go with the covenantal school model. So we do have a statement of faith that we ask all of our parents to sign off on. It's pretty simple, but Orthodox theology. and we do ask for a pastoral recommendation letter. So we see a three paired work of the school is one part, family, parents, and their church. Working together is what's going to make a well-rounded student. So we want to know that the church is in partnership with us as well in some ways, and that they know what we're doing and that we're, there's an alignment there. It doesn't have to be the same denomination as us, but generally we ask for the pastor to sign off on our statement of faith, and also to say that this person is active in the church at some level, because we just straight up tell the parents, if you're not active in a church that is pouring into you, you're going to have a harder time at school.
Right.
And your kid's going to have a harder time at school.
Right.
And so and if you're not active and you're not reinforcing these things at home, you know, you're cutting the legs out from underneath us.
Sure.
You mentioned that other pastors had listened to your first visit here and reached out to you to ask for counsel. I'm curious. I'm sure there are people that are going to be listening to your story now and thinking, gosh, our church should be doing this. Our church could do this. Why isn't our church doing this? What would you say to parishioners who are maybe, I don't know, anxious or frustrated or excited with anticipation about their church doing something like this, but maybe their pastor's not signed on yet? How do you win over? How do you win and influence a pastor by it?
Well, that's a great question. Well, the way it started for us and the way I would recommend anyone to do this is to begin with a couple of people that might have a similar or be sympathetic or relating to that view of church or other young families, and get them together and begin to pray and say, Lord, was this something you would have us do? And I would begin to really work that groundwork amongst congregants of who might be interested. And then when you can come to a pastor and say, there's a group of us that are really interested in this and would be a part of it if it were to happen, what do you think?
If you tell a church leader, I'm sorry to interrupt, but here's what I hear you saying. You come to a church leader with a loose framework of support and a plan. We're there for you if we do this thing. Not, hey, we think this is a great idea, Pastor. Take it and you do it.
Right.
Pastors don't, they've got their full plate already.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's obviously going to go nowhere. Yeah. So when you come to a pastor and say, we want to know if you're behind this and just your support and would help us make this happen, I think a lot of pastors would go, well, okay, let me pray about it. But instead of, because that is what happens, people say, we think that we should start a school and we need you to do it.
Yeah. Right.
I'm a little busy, the pastor. This brings us to the mentor part, because you didn't necessarily know what you were doing when you dove into this and you plugged into the foundation and you met a mentor. Let's kind of retell that story a bit, because for people that still aren't really familiar with the foundation and how the foundation can help steer you, walk us through that process and what you found helpful here.
Yeah, so it started with working with the school box, which is, of course, the resources with the Herzog Foundation, and loaded with all kinds of things that are just helpful resources in there. But the main thing was, of course, pairing you with a mentor. So when you sign up for the school box, you get paired with a mentor. We got paired with Mark Wilson out in California, who is part of a much larger school, been around a long time, and was able to, he started immediately to communicate with us over Zooms, me and another fellow elder who was helping lead the school. And basically, it was an opportunity for him to ask us good pointed questions. Have you thought about this? Have you thought mm-hmm. about that? And then for us to ask his questions, what do you do about this? What do you do mm-hmm. about that? And that began this relationship. But then also, our mentor, he actually came out here for a training, and you guys interviewed him.
Yes.
And he even came and took time out of that training come down to our school, and he walked around. And this is before we'd even started, and said, well, have you thought about that there? Have you thought about this here? And so invaluable, just a wonderful resource to have that. And so, and we continue with that. And there, I know there are steps within the school box and in the mentoring that you can, they keep track of your progress as okay. you go.
Didn't cost you a penny.
Didn't cost us a penny.
That's yeah. what I think is so amazing, because talk about this. I'm all over Facebook with like this business group, this mentor group, this and pay. And yes, people have expertise, and yes, you should pay them. However, there is something amazing about what I think Herzog is doing, where you don't, the mission is important and what's happening is important. And you, as a fledgling brand new school, you know, everything start young families, you know, you're not like, well, let me just get on my wallet and let me pay the next, you know, brightest and best thing to come help me out. You got paired up with somebody that clicked in such a way that it was more than beneficial to you, and it didn't cost anything. And I think that is missional yep. in and of itself. And I think that's amazing.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
And then you were able to send a marketing, like some of your people from your school, like yep. was it parents? Was it a teacher? Yep. Who did you send?
Because then you sent someone. Elder who came here. And it was a godsend, because we were kind of sitting around going, this marketing thing is difficult.
It is.
What do we really need to be doing? And then, of course, I thought, you know what? I wonder if the Herzog Foundation, because I had known that you'd host these things, is doing something on marketing. And sure enough, it was rather close to that period, and there were still a couple available slots was on marketing. And so we said, hey, who wants to go? And these two ladies went and came, and that's where they really learned about the power of word of mouth and how we can. So once we started doing some of the initiatives we learned there, we did see some more families that showed interest. And they were just blown away, of course. You know, they felt like royalty. They loved coming here. It was just an amazing thing to have. And for us, it's our backyard, too.
Right. So there's a huge benefit, I think, for this area.
And these trainings, you know, we did a show a few weeks ago, three weeks ago, with Sadie Elliott, who heads yes. all of our training here. And all the different divisions of the training, we kind of walked through all the different kinds of trainings that are offered. And they do this all over the country, by the way. So right. if you're wherever you happen to be in a small community or a large one, odds are we'll probably bring these trainings on the road to somewhere reasonably close. And if you can travel to them, the foundation covers all of it. And we'll cover your mentor, like you just mentioned, Pastor.
Well, and I think she even said that I thought was interesting. They try to pick locations that, you know, you get a central spot that offers, you know, whatever.
Geographically
yeah. within a day's drive. So and to do that all over the country, that's strategic. That's not without a plan. And I think that's obviously yeah. for reasons like this. And you get somebody from California who's here who can travel down to your school. I just think that's incredible.
Well, Herzog is helping. It's a movement that's happening.
That's awesome.
And I can't tell you how much this is going to pay dividends going forward, because my hope and prayer is taking it back to the Protestant Reformation. Every church is school. Mm-hmm. You know, why not? Why can't every church have a school? And is it okay that if it's just seven kids? And how can you do it?
A year later now, do you think if a pastor reached out to you now and said, Luke, I really think I'd like to do this, but boy, I need to talk through some things. Do you feel more equipped now to have that conversation than you did a year ago?
Yeah, certainly.
Yeah.
Certainly. Still not fully equipped by any
sure.
means.
Sure, yeah.
But, oh my goodness, yeah. And more so just if I can push or say anything, it is the faith component. Mm-hmm. It is scary. There's a lot of work to be done. It's worth it, but God comes through.
We talk about this in Sunday school, I feel like, every week when we're talking about, you know, whoever. I don't know. I'm trying to think right now of, like, Moses, you know, is listening to God tell him something, and he's like, I don't know if I really want to do this
yeah,
right
not
now.
Me. I'm not equipped. Yeah.
You know, and God continually says, I'm gonna do this for you, and then I'm gonna do this for you, and then I'm gonna do this for you. And I think sometimes it's just about opening up your heart in a way to just kind of let go of some of that fear. And I say that for the school approach, people thinking about leaving are making some educational choices that maybe are out of the box a little bit. But I also say it for the people that are starting a school or for the pastor that maybe is listening, who's like, I've got some space. I could, I could do this. I know that, these people need help. Or
it's a perception thing, isn't it? It's like you just said, I think a lot of people immediately think, well, we can't build a track and a football stadium and a, right? Is that kind of where people go? They think traditional school and they think, right. Oh, we can't build something like the school district next door.
And they've got it, but it starts the shovel.
Mm-hmm. Starts with the shovel.
Yeah.
And you don't, I don't know, there's other ways, right? You don't have to have a track. You don't have to have, like, there are, you kind of have to, I say it all the time, but it's kind of like that unschooling movement. It's sort of that undoing thing. Yeah. You just have to kind of undo what, I don't know. I don't know. I just think those things are important.
God humbles you and breaks hands you down to the studs.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. And I think we part of our biggest problem as Christians is often getting our own way. We get ahead of God again and again. And that was part of this process, is I want to just keep running out in front of God and having to just wait on him. But when he comes through, you have to sit back and go, it just blows you away. And and the church is revitalized because they all have to witness to, like, God just did that, didn't he? How did that happen? We all thought this was foolhardy and impossible. I said, isn't he great?
Yeah.
And it leaves us in worship.
What a minute.
But I want to say just one thing on to encourage other pastors. It doesn't have to be also the school starting, as you mentioned, its own school, because there are what started to inspire us is we hosted a classical conversations group, cohort, homeschooling cohort, that meets once on Mondays, once a week. And that kind of this works well. And there are so many schools and or parent groups that are getting this going, that are looking for a building, they're looking for that support. Mm-hmm. And so that's also a good place to start as a pastor or a leadership team, to be thinking about, okay, maybe I don't know how to start from scratch on this, but maybe there is someone who's already around us who is thinking about this. And that's a great prayer, right, to say, find out where God is working and how you can join him.
So, right. So for example, if there are a group of homeschool parents in your community, making it known, hey, we'd be interested in hosting you here if you need a facility to gather once a week, something like that.
Just being honest, well, I'm not sure this is what we can give you a day if it's just home, if it's one day a week you need.
Right.
We're not sure exactly. We got these other ministries that we're trying to work with, and it's okay to play that balancing act. But I know that when you begin to open that door, other things come of it.
Sure.
And you start to get inspired, and the church starts. So it's okay to kind of put your foot in the door. And I would encourage some people to do that. Say, well, what could we give a classroom or, start praying? Okay, Lord, we hear this. Just start in prayer. If you got someone out there who wants to start a school, please connect us. that's the kind of faith
and he'll
I'm
work. I think
about.
He does. He works in those ways. Yep. And you had mentioned also earlier before, your daughter is one of the students that is attending, which I think is amazing. And she's kindergarten age.
Yep.
She is.
Yep.
What is she? If you don't mind answering. What does she enjoy about the school? What are some things that she, I guess, values or likes as a five-year-old, as a little one? And then also, is she aware that school looks different for other people versus her, what she's doing? I'm just curious on both those ends if she's cognizant of that.
She probably doesn't know any different.
No, actually, she doesn't. Yeah, and that's the tricky part, but also the good part. And I think a lot of these new schools from scratch tend to start with younger kids.
I agree.
That can kind of go through the process, because it is, and we'll just say this to parents, it is jarring to be a high schooler
and
come into this situation. Mm-hmm. And so we get that totally. So you're most likely, when you start a school, going to see younger kids, and that's probably the most healthiest. Not that we should forget about our older kids.
No, right.
But that might be one of the healthier pieces of this. So she loves, of course, being able to see Daddy every day. She loves that. Her teacher is a retired public school art teacher.
Oh, fun.
And so they do a lot of art. So we have a lot of hands-on art activities, and she loves to draw. She's got two other girls her exact age in her class. Okay. But that we sing a lot. We have chapel, as I said, every morning. We all eat lunch together. So there's a real I would say that every student feels like they're part of a family, and there's love. And
that's awesome.
Some of these kids, we have some of the older ones in middle school age, are coming out of situations and schools that they felt anything but love.
Yeah. I was going to say, you do not find out. Yeah, that's a hard thing to have.
We won't end on this, but I will just ask because I always like real. What has either surprised you or shown the biggest challenge? What has been the toughest part in this year since we talked? Has there been something where you went, "Ooh, I didn't anticipate that. This is a little more than I thought it would be." I mean, what's the realistic hard about this? Because there's hard.
There's hard, right.
Yep. The realistic hard is going to be sticking to your guns on your values, particularly around enrollment. And this is just kind of the tricky where the rubber meets the road, because if you don't hold to your standards, particularly as a covenantal school, then you'll quickly find that you're dealing with some families that really want to be a part of your school, or they're leaving a certain situation for the sake of their kid, and they might be looking to you be a reform school or something of that nature. And you have a real vulnerability when you're starting something new to just take everyone who knocks on the door. Mm-hmm. And that's our Christian mentality, right? But to recognize the difference between this is the covenantal school, and yes, we realize that not all of our kids are going to be Christian, but their families are. They're trying mm-hmm. to get them in this discipleship environment. But we're not equipped to be a reform school or an evangelist school in this, is what we realized.
Important.
And so, mm-hmm. but your fear is take everyone, because we need to.
We need
yes.
to.
Yes, numbers, yeah. numbers, numbers.
Right.
But and we quickly realized this, and I've heard this from many schools. You realize that you'll find yourself in over your head quite quickly dealing with behavioral issues, parents who aren't on the same page with you, who mm-hmm. don't align your values, so that when you come to them and say, this is what's going on, this is our issue, they look at you and say, okay, fix it. And if they don't have that at home, same value, and that church mm-hmm. backing, it's impossible for us to really fix whatever that problem may be.
So does Absolutely. that tells me then that you have had to have uncomfortable conversations about this is not a right fit right now?
Yes. And that's guaranteed for pastors and those that are listening to this. That's going to be their biggest issue that they're going to run into, is because you're going to want to look past some things and mm-hmm. take people in. But a lot of people come to new schools quickly because they're fleeing something.
Yes, they knee-jerk reaction. Absolutely.
Run, run, run.
We did. Yeah.
Or they
absolutely.
Had, or something went bad, or they burned a bridge somewhere mm-hmm. else.
Yeah.
And okay.
So that's certainly – that's tricky. That's
yeah,
hard. That's
that
definitely
is.
Our hardest.
Well,
and
boy, is that it's just so important, because if you lose that guidepost and that compass and that true north, then what do you have? You're not any different than what they left to begin with yep. in time.
And I think you're less equipped. You don't have you don't have the team.
And you're looking for that fit. And that is something that I have conversations with people all the time. I'll read some things on Facebook, or I'll have private, not on public place or whatever. I'll have conversations, and I've said a few times, like, I don't know that you're really looking for this type of school. I think you might be looking for this type of situation or this mm-hmm. setting, or because if they're already set against something like
that's right.
a pastor letter yeah. or
we've talked about this. Parents that come to your school and go, well, everything
I think we
seems
actually
great,
talked
but you
about
really
it
need
Mark.
To yeah, you need to not do it that way, or we mm-hmm. we'll do everything but that. Is that you can't come to what we're doing and change what we're doing.
Yes.
Right. We welcome you, but you've got to adhere to what we're doing.
Right.
Got to hold your guns.
Absolutely.
The temptation is so strong, because we could have started with 30 kids.
Could have started with 30.
Yeah.
Really.
But
that's amazing. And I think that speaks to what you're showing, what is important. And I yep. do think the right parents then will see, well, they know what's valuable.
I know you won't commit to this because you can't. And this is God's vision, not yours. You've been clear about that. Have you walked out at all where you could see this? I mean, do you imagine what this could be? You know, we've talked to you a year later. What's 5 years later? What's 10 years later? Or is that impossible to – maybe you have a dream, but what do you
– Oh, man. You know, I appreciate that question, but as I've learned, it's – I submit all my dreams and goals to Christ and what he wants to see happen. And because I recognize that ministry is happening today. Mm-hmm. Kids are being reached today. Families are being reached today, and that's enough for me. I would love to see, I can tell you, I guess what I would love to see, I would love to see our school at capacity and having to form new schools and new partnerships. Mm-hmm. I would love to see that. I would love to see many, many families see the value of a private Christian education. And I want to help equip others. I mean, actually, as I said, at other schools in the nation that have started to open because of these stories, but also my own parents. I grew up a pastor's kid, and they started a school in Pala, Kansas, if you know where that is.
Right. That's
the only Christian school in their area. And,
that's right.
And they're thriving.
After you did?
After we did. They were inspired. Like my mom, who said, I always wanted to have you guys Christian. I just didn't know what to do. Now I'm seeing you do it. And
that's right, because it was Jamie who grew up in a Christian school, yes. Right? And you did not.
Right, no.
Yes, now I'm remembering.
This is remarkable. Oh my gosh. Your parents followed your lead and started their own Christian school in their community.
Correct.
In a tiny Kansas rural
town where there's no options. And they've started with 20 kids.
And now they have an option.
Yes.
Which is amazing.
20 kids.
Yeah, same system. Basically gave them the handbook. Here's what we're doing. Make it your own. Same curriculum, same covenantal structure. And so
they're in a wildly smaller community than you, and they immediately took on 20.
Yeah, because there is at least in our area, there's options to pick from. But where they're out in Kansas, they're the only ones.
Yeah,
and they're right there in the center of the public schools too, and in a church with many public school teachers, and they're very connected, and they love their community in that regard, but. They really are meeting a need there.
That's amazing.
How cool.
I think that is a good thing to end on, I think, actually. Yep. That is a good...
We might have to do like an annual check-in with you. Because I always feel like you're just the right messenger for
at just
this
the right time.
Process.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you're humble enough to know what you don't know, modest enough to know that it'll come on its own time, and you're not rushing or pushing. And it just feels so natural. There's nothing forced. There's nothing uncomfortable. It's just a natural progression. The way I would hope, if anybody decides to do this, they would experience mm-hmm. the same thing. Not explosive, not dramatic, not aggressive, not amazing. Just slow and steady wins the race.
Well, here we are, and here plotters. I am. Like, it's awesome.
Yeah, be naive enough for God to use you.
I love that.
Fantastic. I like
Pastor,
it.
Pastor, thank you for coming back and sharing this. Congratulations mm-hmm. on your first year.
Amen. Thank you guys for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Making the Leap is a podcast presentation courtesy of the Herzog Foundation. Please rate and comment on the show, as well as subscribe so you never miss an episode. And we'll see you next time on Making the Leap.